The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Larissa Biggers for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is poetry. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the poetry of W.S. Merwin. Born September 30th, 1927 in New York City, William Stanley Merwin was the son of a Presbyterian minister, for whom he began writing hymns at the age of five. He was raised in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and attended Princeton University on a scholarship. As a young man, Merwin went to Europe and developed a love of languages. He lived in Majorca, London, France, Mexico, and several places in the United States, including Boston and New York. In 1976, Merwin moved to Hawaii to study Buddhism. He married Paula Dunaway in 1983. For over 40 years, William and Paula lived in a house that William designed and helped build, surrounded by acres of land, once devastated and depleted from years of erosion, logging, and other irresponsible agricultural practices. Together, the Merwins restored the land into one of the most comprehensive palm gardens in the world. Paula Merwin died in 2017. William continued to live, write, and garden in Hawaii until he died at home on Friday, March 15, 2019. W.S. Merwin wrote nearly every day of his life from morning until about 2 in the afternoon. Across 7 decades, his dedicated practice produced an extraordinary range of critically acclaimed poetry, prose, and translations that span a range of subjects and styles. His writing is collected in nearly 50 books. Today, I'll be reading a selection of Merwin's poetry taken from the Merwin Conservancy website. And that's www.merwinconservancy.org. The first poem I'll read is called A Black Kite. These long, cool days at the end of spring begin with a soundless blaze at sunrise. Above the distant rim of the valley, all day clouds gather and clear again, as I remember other cold springtimes here. Through the coming and going of years, the losses, the changes, the long love come to at last, with the river down there flowing through all of it, under the clear moment that never changed. In all that time, not asking for anything. Still, the wren sings and the oriole remembers, and every evening now, a black kite glides low overhead, coming from the upland alone, not climbing the thermals, not hunting, not calling, not busy about anything, wings and tails scarcely moving as he slips out above the open valley, filled with the long gold light before sunset, sailing into it only to be there. The second poem I'll read today is called A Contemporary. What if I came down now out of these solid dark clouds that build up against the mountain, day after day with no rain in them, and lived as one blade of grass in a garden in the south when the clouds part in winter. From the beginning, I would be older than all the animals, and to the last, I would be simpler. Frost would design me, and dew would disappear on me. Sun would shine through me. I would be green with white roots, feel worms touch my feet as a bounty, have no name and no fear, turn naturally to the light, know how to spend the day and night climbing out of myself all my life. This poem is called One Summer. It is hard now to believe that we really went back all... It is hard now to believe that we really went back that time, years ago, to the small town, a mile square along the beach, and a little more than a century old, where I had been taken when I was a child, and nothing seemed to have changed, not the porches along the quiet streets, nor the fences on the rocker or the rockers near the, nor the faces on the rockers, nor the sea smell from the boardwalk at the end of the block, nor the smells from the cafeteria in a house like the others along the same sidewalk, nor the hush of the pebbled streets without cars, nor the names of the same few hotels, nor the immense clapboard auditorium to which my mother had taken me to a performance of Ada, and you and I walked those streets in a late youth of our own and along the boardwalk toward the music we heard from the old carousel. This poem is called Now It Is Clear. Now it is clear to me that no leaves are mine, no roots are mine, that wherever I go, I will be a spine of smoke in the forest, and the forest will know it. We will both know it. And that birds vanish because of something that I remember flying through me as though I were a great wind, as the stones settle into the ground, the trees into themselves, staring as though I were a great wind, which is what I prayed for. It is clear to me that I cannot return, but that some of us will meet once more even here, like our own statues, and some of us still later without names, and some of us will burn with the speed of endless departures and be found and lost no more. The next poem is called A Door. This is a place where a door might be, here, where I am standing, in the light outside all the walls. There would be a shadow here, all day long, and a door into it, where now there is me. And somebody would come and knock on this air, long after I have gone, and there in front of me, a life would open. The next poem is called A Night Fragrance. Now I am old enough to remember people speaking of immortality as though it were something known to exist, a tangible substance that might be acquired to be used perhaps in the kitchen every day and whatever was made there forever. And they applied the word to literature and the names of things, names of persons and the naming of other things for them. And no doubt they repeated that word with some element of belief. When they named a genus of somewhat more than 100 species of tropical trees and shrubs, some with flowers most fragrant at night, for James Theodore Tabertin Montana, of Heidelberg, physician and botanist, highly regarded in his day, over 4 centuries ago. Immortality might be like that, with the scattered species continuing their various evolutions, the flowers opening by day or night, with no knowledge of bearing a name of anyone, and their fragrance, if it reminds at all, not reminding of him. This poem is called A Single Autumn. The year my parents died, one that summer, one that fall, I moved into the house where they had lived their last years. It had never been theirs and was still theirs in that way for a while. Echoes in every room, without a sound, all the things that we had never been able to say, I could not remember. Doll collection in a china cabinet, plates stacked on shelves, lace on top of drop leaf tables and a dried branch of bittersweet before the hall mirror. We're planning all to wait. The glass doors of the house remain closed. The days had turned cold, and out in the tall hickories, the blaze of autumn had begun on its own. I could do anything. This poem is called The Estuary. By day, we pace the many decks of stone boat, and at night, we are turned out in its high shadows, in its high windows, like stars of another side. Taste our mouths. We are the salt of the earth. Salt is memory in storm and cloud. We sleep in fine rigging like riding birds. Taste our fingers, each with its own commandment. Day or night, it is harder to know than we know, but longer. We are asleep over charts at running windows. We are asleep with compasses in our hands. And at the bow of the stone boat, the wave from the ends of the earth keeps breaking. This poem is called Wild Oats. Watching the first sunlight touch the tops of the palms, what could I ask? All the beads have gone from the old string, and the string does not miss them. The daughters of memory never pronounce their own names. In the language of heaven, the angel said, "Go make your own garden." I dream I am here in the morning, and the dream is its own time. Looking into the old well, I see my own face, and then another behind it. There I am, morning clouds in the east wind. No one is in the garden. The autumn daisies have the day to themselves. All night, in the dark valley, the sound of rain arriving from another time. September, when the wind drops, and to us it seems that the days are waiting. I needed my mistakes in their own order to get me here. Here is a full moon bringing us silence. I call that singing bird my friend, though I know nothing else about him, and he does not know I exist. What is it that I keep forgetting? Now I have lost it again, right here. I have to keep telling myself why I am going away again. I do not seem to listen. In my youth, I believed in somewhere else. I put faith in travel. Now I am becoming my own tree. This poem is called Under the Day. To come back like autumn to the moss on the stones after many seasons, to recur as a face backlit on the surface of a dark pool one day after the year has turned from the summer it saw, while the first yellow leaves stare from their forgetting and the branches grow spare, is to waken backward down through the still water, knowing without touching all that was ever there and has been forgotten, and recognize without name or understanding, without believing or holding or direction, in the way that we see at each moment the air. This poem is called Waking to the Rain. The night of my birthday, I woke from a dream of harmony, suddenly hearing an old man, not my father, I said, but it was my father, grasping my name as he fell on the stone steps outside, just under the window, in the rain. I do not know how many times he may have called before I woke. I was lying in my parents' room in the empty house, both of them dead that year, and the rain was falling all around me, the only sound. This poem is called To Paula in Late Spring. Let me imagine that we will come again when we want to, and it will be spring. We will be no older than we ever were. The worn griefs will have eased like the early cloud through which the morning slowly comes to itself, and the ancient defenses against the dead will be done with and left to the dead at last. The light will be as it is now in the garden that we have made here these years together of our long evenings and astonishment. The next poem is called The Source. There in the fringe of trees, beneath the upper field and the edge of the one below it that runs above the valley, one time I heard in the early days of summer the clear ringing, six notes that I knew were the opening of Fingal's Cave Overture. I heard them again and again that year, and in the next summer and the year afterward, those six descending notes, the same, for all the changing of my life since then, the last time I had heard them fall from me, I had heard them fall past me from the bright air in the morning of a bird, and I believed that what I had heard would always be there if I came again, to be overtaken by that season in that place after the winter, and I would wonder again whether Mendelssohn really had heard them somewhere far to the north that many years ago, looking up from his youth to listen to those six notes of an ancestor, spilling over from a presence neither water nor human that led to the cave of his mind, the fluted cliffs and the wave going out under the falling water. He thought those notes could be the music, for Mendelssohn is gone and Fingal is gone, all but his name for a cave and for one piece of music and the black-capped warbler, as we called that bird, that I remember, singing those notes descending from the age of the ice dripping. I've not heard it again this year. Can it be gone? Then I will not hear it from now on. Will the overture begin for a time? All those who listen feel that falling in them, but as always, without knowing what they recognize. This poem is called Gift. I have to trust what was given to me, if I am to trust anything. It led the stars over the shadowless mountain, what it does not remember in its night and silence, what it does not hope, knowing itself, no child of time? What did it not begin? What will it not end? I have to hold it up in my hands as my ribs hold up my heart. I have to let it open its wings and fly among the gifts of the unknown, again in the mountain. I have to turn to the morning. I must be led by what was given to me, as streams are led by it, and braiding flights of birds, the gropings of veins, the learning of plants, the thankful days, breath by breath. I call to it, nameless one, O invisible, untouchable, free. I am nameless. I am divided. I am invisible. I am untouchable and empty. Nomad, live with me. Be my eyes, my tongue and my hands, my sleep and my rising. Out of chaos, come and be given. This poem is called End of a Day. In the long evening of April, through the cool night, Bale's two sheepdogs sail down the lane like magpies for a flock. A moment before, he appears near the oaks, a stub of a man, rolling as he approaches, smiling and smiling, and his dogs are afraid of him. We stand among the radiant stones, looking out over green, lucent wheat and earth, combed red under bare walnut limbs. Bees hanging late in cowslips and lingering bird cherry stumps and brush that were the grove of hazel trees, where the land turns above the draped slopes and the valley filled with its one sunbeam. And we exchange a few questions as though nothing were different. But he has bulldozed the upland pastures and the shepherd's huts into piles of rubble and has his sheep fenced in everyone's meadows now. The smell of box and damp leaves drifts from the woods where a blackbird is warning of nightfall. Bale has plans to demolish the ancient walls of the lane and level it wide so that trucks can go all the way down to where the lambs, with perhaps 2 weeks to live, are waiting for him at the wire. He hurries toward them while the sun sinks and the hour turns chill as iron, and in the oaks the first nightingales of the year kindle their unapproachable voices. The next poem is called Looking for Mushrooms at Sunrise. When it is not yet day, I am walking on centuries of dead chestnut leaves in a place without grief, though the oriole out of another life warns me that I am awake. In the dark, while the rain fell, the gold chanterelles pushed through a sleep that was not mine, waking me so that I came up the mountain to find them. Where they appear, it seems I have been before. I recognize their haunts as though remembering another life. Where else am I walking, even now, looking for me? This poem is called Sky in September. In spite of the months of knowing and the years, autumn comes with astonishment, light held up in a glass, the terrible news in a haze caught breath in the warm leaves. In spite of the gathering dust and the vast moon, the day comes with a color. Its words cannot touch, so it is when I see you, after the years, when the leaves drifted unnoticed, down the gray wall. They have disappeared, and nothing is missing. After their rocking and clinging, they have vanished with the thieves and shufflers, and the words of dealers, taking nothing. They have fallen like scales from the eyes, and at last we are together, light of autumn, clear morning, and the only time. The next poem is called Shorebirds. While I think of them, they are growing rare after the distances they have followed all the way to the end for the first time, tracing a memory they did not have until they set out to remember it at an hour when all at once it was late and newly silent and the white had turned white around them. Then they rose in their choir on a single note, each one of them alone, between the pull of the moon and the hummed undertone of the earth below them. The glass curtains kept falling around them as they flew in search of their place before there were anywhere, and storms winnowed them. They flew among the places with towers and past the tower lights, where some vanished with their long legs for waiting in shadow. Others were caught and stayed in the countries of the nets and in the lands of the lime twigs, some fastened, and after the countries of guns, at first light, fewer of them than I remember would be here to recognize the light of late summer when they found it, playing with darkness along the wet sand. This poem is called January. So, after weeks of rain at night, the winter stars that much further in heaven without our having seen them, in far light are still forming, the heavy elements that when the stars are gone fly up as dust, finer by many times than a hair, and recognize each other in the dark, traveling at great speed and becoming our bodies in our time, looking up after rain in the cold night together. This poem is called The Wonder of the Imperfect. Nothing that I do is finished, so I keep returning to it, lured by the notion that I long to see the whole of it at last, completed and estranged from me. But no, the unfinished is what I return to as it leads me on. I am made whole by what has just escaped me, as it always does. I am made of incompleteness. The words are not there in words. Oh, gossamer, gossamer breath, moment, daylight, life, untouchable, by no name, with no beginning. What do we think we recognize? This poem is called The Blackboard. The question itself has not changed, but only the depths of memory through which it rises. And now, in a late dream of childhood, my father is a blackboard that I have just erased, and I am standing with my back to it, holding the old, worn, gray felt eraser that we will take later out into the schoolyard and will clap it against the others that were used today. And the clapping will raise a cloud of white dust, a thin ghost that will float above us for a moment and then will be gone. And no more rises from old erasers almost clean. And then how had my father come to be the blackboard? It may have been because of what he liked to call sins of omission, which sounded impressive and he thought would impress the congregation. And where are they now, the sins of omission? Where is the cloud, the schoolyard, the dream? Even now, I am forgetting them. The next poem is called The Peasant. His prayer to the powers of the world. All those years you ate and changed and grew under my picture, you saw nothing. It was only when I began to appear that you said I must vanish. What could I do? I thought things were real, cruel, and wise, and came and went in their names. I thought I would wait. I was shrewder, but you were dealing in something else. You were always embarrassed by what fed you and made distances faster than you destroyed them. It bewitched my dreams. Like magazines I took out with the sheep that helped to empty the hours, I tried to despise you for what you did not need to be able to do, if I could do it. Maybe I could have done it without you. My contempt for you, you named ignorance, and my admiration for you, servility. When they were among the few things we had in common, your trash and your poses were what I most appreciate, just as you did, and the way you were free of me. But I fought in your wars. The way you could decide things were not, and they died. And the way you had reasons good enough for your time. When God was dying, you bought him out, as you were in a position to do. Coming in the pale care through the mud and fresh dung, unable to find the place, though you had been there once at least before, like the doctor without a moment to lose, I was somewhere in the bargain. I was used to standing in the shade of the sky, a survivor. I had nothing you could use. I am taking my hands into the cleft wood assembled in dry corners in abandoned barns, beams being saved for nothing, broken, doors, pieces of carts. Other shadows have gone in there and wait. On hewn feet, I follow the hopes of the owls for a time. I will drift from the tool scars in a fine dust, noticeably before rain in summer, and at the time of the first thaws, and at the sounds of your frequent explosions. And when the roofs fall, it will be a long while since anyone could still believe in me, any more than if I were one of the immortals. This poem is called Presidents. The president of shame has his own flag. The president of lies quotes the voice of God at the last counted. The president of loyalty recommends blindness to the blind. Oh, applause like the heels of the hanged. He walks on eyes until they break, and then he rides. There's no president of grief. It is a kingdom, ancient, absolute, with no colors. Its rule is never seen. Prayers look for him also, empty flags like skins. Silence the messenger runs through the vast lands with a black mouth, open, silence. The climber falls from the cliffs with a black mouth like a call. There is only one subject, but he is repeated tirelessly. This poem is called No Shadow. Dog's grief and the love of coffee lengthen like a shadow of mine, and now that my eyes no longer swear to anything, I look out through the cloud light of this autumn and see the valley where I came first more than half my life ago. Oh, more than half, with its river, a sky in the palm of a hand, never unknown and never known, never mine and not mine. Beyond it into the distance, the ridges reflect the clouds, now through a morning without shadows. The river still seems not to move, as though it were the same river. This poem is called Once Later. It is not until later that you have to be young. It is one of the things you meant to do later. But by then, there is someone else living there, with the shades rolled down. How could you have been young there at that time, with all that was expected? And then, what happens to those expectations? There is no sign of them there. A shadow passes across the window shade. What do they know in there, whoever they are? We have run out of time for today's episode of poetry. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Larissa Biggers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Visit ncreadingservice.org for more information about NCRS. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. The content of today's program was taken from the website The Merwin Conservancy. That's www.merwinconservancy.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.